Coming up on Tech News Today, Kim.com's back, and it's mega! But just mega. Also, the Bucket Brigade keeps a Manhattan data center up, and Facebook aiming at Craigslist. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for All Saints Day, November 1st, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by American Express Bank, FSB, offering a high-yield savings account, the perfect complement to help you reach your savings goals. To learn more and open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/online savings, member FDIC. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphones. Find out what your gadget is worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I assure you, I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
I don't know if I believe you, Ayaz. I'm Jason Howell.
Where did his beard go?
I don't know. Somebody lifted it off of his face.
It'll be back, I promise.
This is the show where we wonder where his beard went and also keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 of the day in the news fuse. Hey, Kim.com is back in business. While the entrepreneur is still facing extradition from New Zealand to the U.S. on charges relating to copyright theft, he'll be launching Mega. The file-sharing site will use encryption to hide the contents of files uploaded and be hosted outside the United States with a Gabon domain name. That'll keep ICE off his back. The site is supposed to launch January 20th, which would be a year to the day after .com was arrested.
A UK Court of Appeals does not think that Apple apologized enough in its statement that Samsung did not, in fact, copy its design. It was forced to print that. Calls it non-compliant, in fact. So Apple has now been told to correct the statement, repost it on the front page of Apple.com with at least an 11-point font within 48 hours. Apple says, no, we're going to need at least 2 weeks to get a fresh rework together, which some judges think it's just pretty ridiculous. But no matter when it goes up, it must remain on Apple's site until December 14th.
Oh, Scott Forstall used to handle all that stuff for us. Sorry.
Yeah. We need some time.
I'm going to do an impression of iFixit. Look, a technology thing. Tear it apart. The iFixit folks took apart the iPad mini. And it looks like Apple used design cues from the iPod Touch and the iPhone 5 even inside the machine. iFixit found while there were no traces of a unicorn, there were dual speakers in the mini, and the display was made by frequent legal dance partner Samsung.
The four largest U.S. mobile phone service providers have turned on a joint database of IMEI numbers specific to hardware. The idea is that a stolen phone would not be able to avoid detection just by switching the SIM card or switching the carrier. The hope is that stolen phones will then become useless, removing the motivation for stealing them in the first place.
Amazon is getting into the Android app game. The company released a new photo management app called Cloud Drive Photos for Android phones and tablets that stores files in Cloud Drive, which is Amazon's competitor to Google Drive and Dropbox and other cloud services. Cloud Drive offers 5 gigabytes of storage for free or for $10 a year, an additional 20 gigabytes. Cloud Drive is already integrated with the Kindle Fire HD, so this seems like a next logical step.
Today, we're going to salute Patrick Stein. Why?
Salute.
Because he figured out a way to make his own Fusion Drive in his Mac Pro using Disk Utility in Terminal after rummaging through an Apple support document. So Stein put together an SSD and a traditional hard drive, so his Mac saw it as one big volume. Then the frequently used data was shuttled to the SSD, and infrequently used data was moved to the slower drive. The effect? A homemade Fusion drive that should use the same technology that Apple's using.
Sue that man! Uber has reinstated a controversial surge pricing scheme in New York City. It does not relate to storm surges, but price surges. Surge pricing allows drivers to set higher rates, which motivates them to bring their cars out on the streets at times when they might not want to otherwise. It's been used previously on nights like New Year's Eve to make sure there's cars available in places that might not have cars. Uber says they will not take any of the increased revenue, which will instead go to the drivers.
I thought I would have surge pricing last night because it was Halloween.
Nope.
Nope. No, I actually...
Yeah, because Halloween's another time when they do it a lot.
I guess it's midweek. According to the company, it's like, it's a Wednesday, not a surge. Microsoft has released Windows Phone for OS X. The software, previously known as Windows Phone 7 Connector for Mac, now has a better name and has undergone a new look to go with its new name, with a lot of new features like support for Windows Phone 8, drag and drop support for files between Windows Phone and your Mac desktop, drag and drop files from your Finder to your Windows Phone 8 devices. You get the idea.
Google took another step towards tying its various services tightly together. Google Drive files can now be viewed in Google Plus and shared directly. Users can share links to files like PDFs, videos, photos, and contacts. They'll just click a thumbnail within Google Plus and it opens the file in a separate browser window.
Hotmail isn't so hot anymore, says ComScore. Gmail is now the top email service with 287.9 million unique worldwide visitors in October. Hotmail dropped to number 2 with 286.2 million uniques, so not that big a difference there. And at number 3, Yahoo with 281.7 million.
Don't you mean Outlook.com? It's called Outlook.com now. It's not always called Hotmail.
No, that was October, so I didn't think it was
Outlook.com.
Maybe.
I think it's called Outlook.
All right, fine.
All right. Let's take a break and thank our sponsor for today's show, American Express Bank FSB, member FDIC. Think about the many ways you need to save money. If you're saving up for really expensive gadgets, or maybe something more serious like a house or a car or just an emergency fund. Hopefully you're setting aside some funds for an unexpected emergency. Well, whatever your goals for saving are, here's a good place to put your money. An American Express Personal Savings High Yield Savings Account, giving you a competitive variable interest rate to help you reach your savings goals. You can easily link this savings account to your existing bank accounts, and you don't have to switch banks. If you're saying, I'm happy with my bank, you can still take advantage of this if you like the interest rate, if you like the fact that you can check your balance by phone or web 24/7, easily meeting your needs, and it has no minimums and no fees. You're like, wait a minute, this is American Express, I got to pay some. No, you don't have to pay anything to set it up. No minimum, no fee. Link to your current bank account and includes great phone support whenever you want to talk to someone. It's a great complement to your existing financial tools. So go take a look at it. Personalsavings.com/online savings is the place to go. And while you're there, you can just open an account. There's no minimums, no fees, and no need to switch banks. All you need to do is get started today. Let American Express Personal Savings help you reach your savings goals by opening this high-yield savings account offered by American Express Bank FSB. That's the high yield savings account at personalsavings.com/online savings, member FDIC. And we sure thank American Express Bank FSB for their support of Tech News Today, allowing us to bring you discussion of all the top stories of the day, starting with Mega. No upload, just Mega. And it's what, ME.GA?
ME.GA. As you mentioned, Kim.com announced his plan for ME.GA, or let's call it Mega, launching on January 20th, 2013. And he announced it on Twitter. He said that the holding page is already getting millions of hits. He said many of the visits are from U.S. authorities themselves tweeting, quote, all FBI agents pressing reload, ha, ha, ha. We see their IP addresses, LOL. So he's very amused by this, apparently. So the plan, here's the plan. Here's how it's going to work. The new Mega encrypts and decrypts your data transparently in your browser on the fly. You hold the keys to what you store, and Mega Upload doesn't, or Mega, doesn't have any of that information. The new Mega is operating from the Gabonese domain, .ga, which has 98,000 internet users, the population of 1.6 million people. So it's a very small place. And the idea behind that is obviously to avoid the United States and domain names under control under the U.S. like .coms. So maybe he'll change his name to .ga. .com is also saying that Mega is not going to be working with any American hosting providers because he kind of wants to avoid that whole jurisdictional issue since, you know, they extradited him and don't want to get him in lots of trouble. I guess my main question for this new service is, can a relaunch site, even as high profile as Mega, can it ever gain a huge following when its leader has this huge target on his back? Because like you're saying, even the FBI is like ready checking this guy over.
Well, that's not a surprise. I mean, he's like, haha, we see you FBI agents who are interested in my next venture. I mean, obviously.
But would you feel like your data was safe there considering what happened with Mega Upload? The fact is those servers were seized. People can't get their data back. The feds say you can't get it back. Mm-hmm. Will people want to even try this after what happened?
I think yes. There will be plenty of people who will want to try this. Would I have trusted Mega Upload in the first place with the things that I want to keep safe in the cloud? No, it's that as many people who actually did that, and there were people who kept non-infringing content at Mega Upload. That's really not what the service was best known for and not what it got popular doing. the people who want to store infringing content or want to store maybe not infringing content, but controversial content will look at this as a great way to store things because of the encryption. If the encryption is as good as he says it's going to be, and that's going to be vetted and people are going to investigate that. But there's a certain cachet in certain circles to Kim.com. There's a lot of people cheering for him, sort of as a Robin Hood of the internet kind of figure, whether you believe that or not. That's what some people believe. And so I think those kind of people are going to flock to him and say, yeah, we want to support him against the feds, against the man. We're going to help him fight. So, yeah, people are definitely going to use this.
I think it's going to take a bunch of brave souls to join the early days, because if this technology is not as good as .com is saying, they could run into the same thing, because there's no way this isn't going to be monitored from day one. Because this is, again, he's high profile and he's mocking the FBI in his tweets. Maybe not the best idea. I mean, I know he's already got a target, and yeah, everyone's aware of him. But is it a great idea to keep saying, hey guys, we know we're doing this. You know what we're going to do, and we don't care. It seems a little crazy to flout.
Government. He's not making friends in the FBI department. But I don't think whether he says, I can tell that FBI people are looking at Mega and I'm going to tweet about it, makes any difference. I mean, if he was super nice, they're still going to be on his back.
And you could make an argument that this will be one of the more secure places to store a file, because it will be hardened against the constant assaults.
People have thought long and hard about how this is a better way to
that's
do it.
That's true. I mean, the Windows is pretty secure because it got attacked so often. And
sure.
That's a lot of things get more secure by getting attacked. So best of luck, I guess, Mr. .com or Mr. .ga.
I like the idea of becoming .ga. I will take the weather today. So you've been doing all the weather stories.
Oh, good. I've been filling in for Burke this
whole time. So we'll just move to the storm map, as you can know. There's still a lot of stories of the recovery in the technology world that's happening in New York City and elsewhere around the region. The one that really is very popular with our audience, because Squarespace is a constant sponsor of Twitch shows, including Tech News Today, and their servers are located at Pier 1. Now, we thought Squarespace was going to go down a couple days ago, the day after the hurricane, and they haven't. Pier 1, which is at 75 Broad Street, lost power from Con Edison on the day of the hurricane. They have been providing the computing power for 100 companies like Squarespace or Fog Creek Software, for example, by carrying buckets of fuel to the 17th floor in a bucket brigade ever since the hurricane hit. Because a storm flooded out the generators in the basement, and the only other generator they had was a rooftop generator on the 17th floor. So a dozen people are carrying 5-gallon buckets of fuel up 17 flights of stairs. On the video, there's a picture of them. We'll have that link in the show notes. There's your brigade that's keeping Squarespace up right now. 17 flights of stairs, 2 buckets each, 2 flights at a time. So they're not going up all the flights themselves. It's you know, taking the 2 buckets, going up 2 flights, handing it to the next person. That person takes it, goes up 2 flights, then goes back down, gets the next one. They started this Tuesday afternoon, went until 1 a.m. That got enough fuel in the generator to keep it going for several hours. Wednesday morning, when the fuel got low, they started up again. The last I saw on the Squarespace blog, the brigade was firing up at 10 a.m. Eastern time this morning, and they were going to get enough in there to keep it going for another 8 hours. It says, we may not be able to deliver more fuel as the building is in shutdown mode. Last estimate is that we have about 3 hours left. Things changed constantly, and we'll keep you updated. So it looks like they're cutting it pretty close. They have a fuel pump, or they have a water pump coming from New Jersey, but the trucks that are bringing the pump so that they can replace the brigade have to get gas in New Jersey. And there's long lines for gas in New Jersey before they can get it over there. But just an incredible effort by people who just decided they wanted to do this because they're dedicated to the data center and they wanted to keep it up keeping your websites online with lots of different hosting companies.
I am a Squarespace user, and I got the email, I think you got one too, Tom, that explained from Squarespace before any blogs were affected, at least not any that I knew of, this is what's going to happen, where our hands are tied, we're so sorry. I mean, it was extremely apologetic and a little bit of a doomsday kind of an email before anything actually happened. So to see, yeah, the going above and beyond even what most people would consider above and beyond just to keep a bunch of websites up is extremely heroic. I mean,
and if you're not seeing the pictures, this isn't just being called a bucket brigade. These are literally buckets. These are not like, I thought it would be a little name for fuel tanks that you're moving around.
You have
those red canisters.
No, these are buckets of gas.
These are giant buckets. These are like 5-gallon buckets that you have to carry around. And those are not easy. And they're doing this just to keep your websites up. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And pretty awesome, actually.
And huge thanks to the dedicated folks at Pier 1 for that. Obviously, this isn't even a life-threatening issue. But these folks are dedicated to what they're doing. And they could be sitting at home in a nice warm place, keeping dry, but instead they're out there trying to make these sites go up. Lots of other stuff going on just to round it up. Verizon's main switching at 140 West to New York. That address may sound familiar to you because it was one of the places that was affected on September 11th, 2001 as well. 140 West got flooded. They're keeping going with emergency generators and temporary fuel tanks that they placed on the street, and then they run wires down into the generators or into the switching equipment that's just above the water line. Broad Street Verizon switching is entirely inoperable and was entirely underwater. FCC said the number of cell phone tower outages has dropped on the second day after the storm, with just over a fifth of the sites in storm-affected areas down. So the situation is getting better. AT&T and T-Mobile, they may not have been able to buy one another, but they have agreed to switch customers across their networks depending on which network is stronger in any given area, thus providing better coverage to people in the area, no matter whether they're on AT&T or T-Mobile. So two companies sort of putting aside their competitive differences for the moment to bring service to people. And iTunes has put up a Red Cross relief donation button if you want to give money to hurricane relief. And remember, it's not just the folks out east in the United States that needs relief. It's also the people in the Caribbean. Haiti, which is still recovering from their earthquake, was hit hard by this hurricane as well. So you might want to take a look at that as well. Let's cheer things back up a little bit with Facebook going after Craigslist. That's the rumor anyway.
Yeah, so this is a story that was written up in The Daily, which of course is an iPad app, but I actually looked at the permalink to the story on the web. Codenamed Marketplace, which is actually another name of a Facebook service, but it's been downgraded, so who knows? This is sort of a code name. This is the idea that Facebook users, there are so many millions of us, right? Why not give us the opportunity to create ads that would appear in our friends' timelines? For example, I'm thinking of selling my dining room table and chairs. Okay, well, I could certainly go to Craigslist for something like that. That's first thing that comes to mind. You know, it's the digital version of the classifieds. Or I could pay a couple bucks to have that appear at the top of Tom and I as his news feeds, so they're sure to see it, doesn't get buried, and they might end up buying it from me, and there you go. So this is, you could think of it as a Craigslist killer, but it's
I'm not buying your collection of Hummels, so you could probably stop paying for that one.
They're not for sale.
Good. Not anymore.
But this is not just about buying and selling things. It could be a jobs board, for example. I could know about a job and post it. And it would be the sort of posting that would show up for people who are in the same geolocated area that the job is, which is a little bit of a gray area because you think, well, what if you're looking to relocate?
Mm-hmm.
So you,
which I am.
Which you actually are doing. that's a whole nother story. Or it could be a rental. So if I'm looking for a new roommate, let's say, well, I don't really need to tell anybody outside of the San Francisco area, and I also don't need to tell anybody who has a pet snake because I'm not comfortable with that. So there are all sorts of personal information that Facebook has on people that can help me target the right people in a Craigslist sort of a way. And it's a very different model than Craigslist. Everything about Craigslist is anonymous, at least at the beginning, right? For better or for worse, you don't know who you're emailing back and forth.
Yeah.
You've got that anon Craigslist email until you get to the point where it's like, okay, we're actually going to exchange goods and services type of a thing. Facebook is the complete opposite. And it actually makes sense that Facebook would do something like this because if I am looking for a new job, and this job requires me to have a master's degree, right? And I haven't filled out all of my school information on Facebook. Well, now I have a much more of an incentive to do so. Maybe fill out a few of more of my interests, things that I'm good at, TV shows that I like. You know, all of that stuff helps Facebook get more data from people, and at the same time helps us communicate.
And as a seller, you know that you're not likely to get scammed, as likely, I should say, to get scammed as you might on Craigslist. I mean, Craigslist famously is in a constant fight
right.
to prevent people from putting one over on folks. And there's always these situations where they're like, they have this list of things like, don't give money to someone before you see their product, mm-hmm. you know, always meet in a public place, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas on Facebook, if you get someone interested in buying something and you see, oh, well, they're a friend of Iaz, and then you can go to Iaz and be like, hey, is this person okay? Oh, yeah, that's my buddy Jeff. You can sell the table to them or whatever. You know, there's more of a chance to be able to check on somebody.
Now, there's already the promoted post thing on Facebook, right, where you can yes. pay money and you can put these things up there.
Right.
So this would be like an evolution to that in some respects, that you could have ads. And the geolocation function seems pretty interesting to me, because on Facebook, I don't know where my friends are half the time anyway.
Right.
Because everyone's moving around. You know, people moving to L.A. or moving to New Zealand or whatever. So it seems like it would make a lot of sense. And also, it probably would take away a bit from LinkedIn as well. As you were mentioning with the whole jobs board aspect, if you've ever tried to like upload your resume or a PDF of it, or try to fill out those ridiculous forms, Facebook at some times is actually somewhat easier to have that information up there. And you could do the quick checks on references. And you're like, oh, reference Tom. You know, you can just click his off of Facebook. It's definitely a really interesting way to make money off of a new way to make money by using mm-hmm. Facebook.
Well, not always making. I mean, some of the stuff, money wouldn't be exchanged at all. It's more of just a blast out. There's a job listing. I want to tell all the people that I think it's relevant to, but then they can go and tell their people, and so word spreads. There are a lot of startups that are trying to do this, too. I mean, you hear about yard sales, one, Zarly. I mean, this is sort of like a, hey, maybe I have a lawnmower, and Iaz would like to just rent it for 20 minutes type of a thing. There's a lot of that going on because it's a pretty cool model, but Facebook isn't a startup. Facebook has all of us there already. So I think that it makes a lot of sense if they can do it correctly, because on Craigslist, there are things that aren't quite right. If, for example, if I'm looking for an apartment, I can check a little box that says, I want to look at an apartment that allows cats, which is relevant to me. I've got cats.
Very.
But that doesn't always work, because sometimes landlords just don't say anything about cats one way right. or the other. So you don't know that they're like, oh, cats are fine. I just didn't check that box.
Yeah.
So Facebook can figure out some of that stuff where there's a little bit of communication being lost, I'd probably use it.
It's intriguing, and it might, like you say, encourage people to use Facebook. But then there's always going to be the problem that not everyone uses Facebook or fills out Facebook honestly or fills it out completely.
Right.
So it's certainly not a perfect system, but it definitely has advantages for sure. Selling things is definitely hard. That leads us to our other sponsor of today's show. I am too lazy to go post classifieds and do all of that stuff. I want to get cash fast, and I want to get it simple. And that's why this summer I sold all my gadgets on Gazelle, at least all the gadgets that I was getting rid of. I kept a lot of them, too. Gazelle.com is a simple and easy way to get cash for your used gadgets so you can get some cash to upgrade to the new stuff. So you go there, and it's dead simple. You see a picture, you're selling your iPad third generation. You see a picture of an iPad. You click iPad third generation. You click, I've got it on AT&T. It's a 3G iPad. And then you say, oh, yeah, it's 64 gig. Give me an offer. They give you an offer right now for $495. Now, those offers change over time as the market changes, and gadgets don't really appreciate in value usually, as certainly over the long term. So the other thing Gazelle does is they lock in your quote. Even if you're on the fence about whether you want to sell it or not, if you go there and you get an offer, that offer is good for 30 days. You got a whole month to decide if you want to take it or to go shop and find another gadget to replace it. Once you are ready to sell it, it's free shipping. You print out a label. Sometimes they'll even send you a box, and you send it off to Gazelle. They get it in a couple days. You've got cash in your PayPal account or a check on its way to you. So really, there's no reason not to go check it out. If you got something that you'd like to get rid of, an iPod, a MacBook, an old cell phone, go to gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Sell your used iPhone today and get cash for the upgrade. Take a minute and go to gazelle.com and find out what your old gadgets are worth. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. The Fusion Drive. We heard about this amazing story in the news, Fuse. Mm-hmm. We've had lots of people emailing us about how they thought it worked versus Intel's technology, but somebody's been able to roll their own.
Right. It was just too much of it to fit into NewsView, so we have to, you know, expand it a little bit. So Patrick Stein, he used command line code to build his own version of Fusion Drive. Now, when Apple announced this whole Fusion Drive thing, they said that OS X Mountain Lion would be able to operate the system without the need for an update. So people started wondering, hey, what is already in OS X that allows this to work? So what he did was he found some support document. He found out that there's a technology called Core Storage that's built into OS X Mountain Lion. And then he used Terminal. He's got all these instructions publicly, by the way. We'll have a link in the show notes. So he showed that if he took an SSD and a hard drive and then created one large volume using Disk Utility, it would act like a Fusion Drive already. Wasn't a whole lot of extra work to it, apparently. Once you make it one logical volume, it works. And how Fusion Drive is different than Intel Smart Response Technology, SRT. We've gotten emails about this. We've gotten voicemails about this. We've gotten Hot Hardware to weigh in on this because I trust those guys. They say Intel's SRT works on the OS level, caches and copies files, or mirrors the data, if you will, whereas Fusion Drive actually moves and relocates the data. So it looks like it's more of a software solution than it is a hardware solution. So it's not like there's something special about the new iMacs, the new Mac Minis.
So the only hardware is you got to have a solid-state drive.
Right.
And just, that's it. Everything else is software?
As long as you can have two separate drives in your machine, it looks like you could make this. And Patrick Stein, at the end of this huge, you know, beautiful piece, he wrote, by the way, I will actually not use Fusion Drive on a Mac, as HFS Plus is not really keeping my data safe. See, my HFS Plus fails miserably demo. Using two HFS Plus disks just increases the risk of data failure. So he's not a fan.
So he's a hater on HFS Plus.
He doesn't like that, but he uses,
that's going to cause a bunch of people to write in who are defending HFS Plus, because that's a point of contention. But it is interesting that he's going to the trouble of doing this big hack. Maybe he's doing it in order to spread his gospel about HFS Plus.
He also said that he can make it work with ZFS, which is that file system that technically I don't think is supported yet on OS X unless you put in a plugin. So it looks like you can do it with something better than HFS Plus if you want to. Because I guess, do you think Apple's going to even give you a tool to do this? Because I mean, they have Boot Camp. That's a thing.
No.
Eventually people asked for it.
Not a chance.
Never an easy to use.
No, because what they're not making any more products that are user serviceable, right? I mean, the trend is we're going to lock things down and glue things in place and not let you go in and add drives, et cetera. I mean, I guess you could do this over a Thunderbolt port, but it's kind of wonky.
I mean, the speeds he was looking at, the difference between the Fusion Drive version versus the separate drives, the SSD was performing much faster once the files moved over like it's supposed to. So I think, I guess with Thunderbolt, it just seems like that'd be strange that you'd have one big drive that happens to be connected by a wire. It definitely seems like a Pro Tool, which is something Apple's kind of moved away from.
Yeah.
Entirely. Mm. But I'm going to try this. You want to try this?
You want to do it on know-how?
I don't know. Maybe.
That's it'd be a good episode.
I could try that out. But when I bet somebody's going to make utility for this, because this seems pretty easy. If it's in terminal,
yeah,
you probably could write an Apple script or some kind of package to do this. So
you could do that.
I probably will try.
I'm
going to need more Macs to mess with.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe I'll make a Hackintosh and try it.
There you go. Wow, it would be the ultimate Hackintosh. But no, I don't think Apple's going to... I think Apple will do with this what it normally does, which is ignore it. They're not going to crack down on it necessarily unless it... what Apple does is they just make their stuff, and if it breaks something like this, they don't care.
I wouldn't...
But they're not going to stop people from doing it. They're certainly not going to promote it because Fusion Drive is a feature for the stuff they're selling.
But on that logic, then Boot Camp would never exist, but it does. That's the weird thing. I'm like, that's one thing that...
Why would that mean Boot Camp would never exist?
Because Boot Camp makes it easier to put Windows on there, and they give you driver support, lots of different things that originally was all like hacks. But then Apple's like, we're going to bless this, and we're going to make it easy and have utility that
you can
use. Yeah,
but the difference is there was no Boot Camp like thing already that someone made a hack for, and they said, oh, well, we'll bless that as well. Boot Camp was something that they brought to it. They've brought Fusion Drive already, so why would they bless this other way of doing Fusion?
I don't know. I'm just hoping, I guess. Just a dream.
Yeah.
Make it easy.
A dream
I
within
like easy
a dream.
Things.
Another dream is battery life for smartphones. What? I didn't hear what you said. Sorry. 1% of global electricity goes to powering cellular base stations. Those are the things that are actually broadcasting the cell signal. A power amplifier wastes a lot of that electricity. It turns your electricity into radio, and it's inefficient. The amps in your phone that send the signals back have the same issue. They waste about 65% of their power. ETA Devices in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which was founded by MIT electrical engineering professors Joel Dawson and David Perreault, have figured out a way to fix this. The problem that they were trying to fix is sudden jumps in power from standby to output can distort the signals. So your standby power is actually kept pretty high and uses a lot of power, even though it's not doing anything. They developed something called asymmetric multi-level outphasing. I don't know what it means either. But what it does is it chooses among different voltages that can be sent across the transistor and selects the one that minimizes power consumption. So it's asymmetric multi-level. Oh, actually, that makes sense now that I look at it that way. It could double the battery life of your smartphone. That's for those of you who don't care about multi-level phasing of anything. You could reduce the consumption of base station power by half. So it saves power. It's good for the energy environment, and it's good for your smartphone. Your smartphone can last longer.
Oh, but this is just one of those things that some researchers figured out that we'll never see in our phones, right, Tom?
No, Sarah.
What?
Well, it's in the lab right now. They're going to formally launch it at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona in February.
Oh, my gosh.
And they plan to commercialize the service next year, targeting LTE base stations. In fact, they're going to start in developing countries where base stations are often powered by diesel generators, which use $15 billion worth of fuel.
And stinky, too.
And very stinky, yeah. Especially when they run them with that French fry diesel. It's delicious, actually.
Deliciously stinky.
But the restaurants
Who's
are all
hungry?
Against it. Yeah.
I love this.
So this.
How exciting.
Usually when there's like new battery technology, it's sort of like, well, might be helpful, might be capable someday. We don't know if it's implementable. This is actually coming next year, and could be in your smartphone within a couple of years.
Well, that's awesome because these processors get faster and faster. And I know the manufacturers are trying to make them less power hungry, but if these batteries are more efficient, that means you can have a little bit of more inefficient processor, or even these efficient processors can go longer. So I'm just kind of curious about what kind of crazy computing power we're going to have.
Octo-cores?
So I think there's, what was Intel working on? A 48-core processor that's supposed to come out like in 5 years?
For a smartphone?
I think so, yeah. Why not? We'll put it together with this battery and we'll have 2 hours of battery life, which I used to have on my phone.
Well, you know, that's some of the critics were saying of this is like, all this is going to do is increase the usage of power by smartphones and base stations. Once they get more power, they'll find clever ways of using it. Because, I mean, you think about it, the batteries we have in our laptops and our smartphones today could power the laptops and smartphones of the year 2001. Well, they weren't really smartphones, but they could power them for days because they use so much less power. As we get more capacity, we do tend to find new ways to use it.
But we also find ways to innovate as well because we've got the power.
Or we'll make it cheaper. And
I've got the power.
Went through my head and I resisted it.
It had to happen.
Why did you do that to all of us?
Had to get it out. Yeah. Had to get the power out.
Weird.
Well, let's get some news summaries out. This is a cool app.
Yeah, it's called Sumly, and it's created by a youngin, a fellow by the name of Nick Delozio. He's about 17 years old, lives in London. He's been around for a while. O'Malik over at GigaOM had actually profiled this child last year, I think around the time of Le Web, and said, hey, he's young, but he's got this great startup. It's all around the idea of people being too busy to read all the news that's out there. This story caught my eye today because recently I had profiled another app called Circa on i5 for the iPhone.
Yeah, I've been using
Which is
Circa.
Very similar. And I thought, well, wait a second. Is that the new thing right now? Is that nobody can read news anymore, so we have to have short summaries made of all the news?
But spoiler alert, Circa is made of people.
Circa is made of people, actually. They're manually using a team of editors to pull information from, let's say, 15 different stories about if the iPad mini is good or not, and putting in just the facts. So if I'm interested in, okay, well, what actually happened at the announcement, and what's the summary of all of this? That's something that Circa's doing, and I've always thought, well, but how do they scale, really? I mean, is their team of editors just going to keep growing? That gets a little bit problematic. The reason that Sumly is interesting is, although the theory is pretty much the same. This is algorithmic. So it's not actually necessary to keep hiring a bunch of folks as long as the algorithm is able to take relevant news out of stories, try to keep, you know, editorial bias to a minimum. And so that's really cool. The algorithm is built by SRI, which is a nonprofit research and development institute based in Silicon Valley.
Siri?
Well,
no, it's
there's
SRI.
There's just the one I, but it looks a lot like the word Siri, yes, which is obviously really, really different than Circa's approach. The idea, again, I'm still not sold on it. I think that some people, if you're a news junkie, yeah, I don't know if I want all of the peripheral stuff taken out of it. There are times where if it's breaking news, for example, the storm on the East Coast is a great example of, you know, I didn't want all of that jokey stuff or the, you know, I wanted facts.
Yeah.
One after another. That's a great example of that.
Can you click through two stories on this?
So, yes, you absolutely can.
So you can use this as a filter and then get more context.
Exactly.
Drill down.
Yeah. It's... Owen Malik, who had a chance to try it out, I've got it on my phone, and it, so far, it actually kind of has a Windows 8 tile-y interface. That was the first thing I thought of. He says, the problem is that, and it works in breaking news, particularly tech news, and we are in the business of that as well. I mean, that's very important. We're going to go to the places that have the news first so that we can get the news out to all of you as quickly as possible. He says, the algorithm is good, but not perfect. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a little bit slow. Now, I don't know if any actual humans are always going to be faster than an algorithm, because that doesn't really work either. I don't know. What do you guys think? What's the best approach for this? Or is this even a service that we need?
It just reminds me of like Ask.com's or About.com's strategy. It was like, we'll have people curate all the results, and Google had an algorithm. I mean, it just depends on what actually gets you the results you want. I mean, if somebody can do this with an algorithm, I mean, it's up against a lot of, you know, link farms and just, you know, scrapers that are just taking data and just putting in effectively spam just to sell ads and to make money. If it can, you know, filter out all that garbage and still find out what's going on, I mean, that's a huge advantage. However, I mean, it's really hard to beat a person when it comes to reading the news, understanding what's important, because sometimes things go like, oh, they're approximately 70 million users, and then somebody rounds that up to 71, and then 75, and then you have this chain of data that turns out to be completely false because somebody used one word that wasn't the same.
Yeah, but I could see an algorithm being good at figuring out what the source is and what the accurate number is there. I think the intriguing thing for me here is the fact that the algorithm summarizes the story and how accurate that's going to be. I want to see that in practice. Algorithm picking the stories, we've got plenty of examples of that. You know, Google News does that all the time. Sometimes it does it well, sometimes it doesn't, you know, but it does it well enough. So to me, it's like, okay, it's that kind of approach. And as long as it does it well enough, will it actually summarize it in a way that makes sense, that gives me the important information? That is the advantage that it has. Because otherwise, you're just talking about tech meme versus Google News, right? Google News is entirely algorithmically run. And it has its own issues. Tech meme is sort of the Circa in this situation, which is it's taking the feeds and has a human massaging it to make sure that the best and most important stuff surfaces to the top. They both have their advantages and disadvantages, and at different times of the day and different days of the week, one is better than the other.
But that's the problem, right, is that we don't actually have one solution. For our show, yeah, I'm looking at Google News and tech meme, well, and Twitter too,
and
just for
subreddit.
Real-time updates,
yeah.
And subreddit. But it's like you can't actually just rely on one source. So apps like this they're compelling to me, but I've never seen a one-stop shop for the sort of news that I am looking for.
But what that avoids is what Google News, remember, Google News in France right now is under threat to have to pay to link to sites because they say they are appropriating the information of those sites. One of the ways you get around that is to rewrite the news. You know, I mean, facts are facts. So if you see something on a news website and then rewrite it yourself, you're not infringing, unless, like, except for the hot news case that came out a while back. But most of the time, you're not infringing. So if this algorithm is doing that, this is the kind of thing that gets Google News out of hot water. They could say, look, we're linking to the source, but we have our own original algorithm-generated information that's being put up on the page. And it's another defense against those kind of attacks. It's amazing what computers can do. They're so smart.
It's a free app, by the way. I mean, if you want to try it out, I love the way it looks. I just we'll see.
If only the batteries could last longer so we can still use those.
Oh, if only. Mm-hmm. We only have to wait till February.
Jason, are you Chad?
Chad? Oh, I might be logged in as Chad, but...
Because Chad just said Siri originated at SRI.
Yes.
Was that you?
That was me.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, did the lack of red hair throw you off?
Well, but you're also logged in as Jason and Reagan 01 and Twit Technical Director.
Depends on Jason which is computer I'm using.
Google Docs follies.
So I really wasn't sure if like Chad was somewhere like, hey, you guys. But so Siri came out of SRI.
Yeah,
I didn't know
SRI product.
Natural language processing.
Oh, so this could be a disaster. Woo-hoo. Then.
It could be.
It's like, oh, this doesn't work at all. Darn.
Well, Siri works.
I'm kidding. I know. Sort of.
So, okay.
Iaz is spelled IYAZ. Let's move on to the random question.
Randomizer.
It's a weird show. Oh.
Make sure they don't send it to me.
IYAZ at twit.tv. Please send me all your hate.
My wife stopped everything last night, called me over to the computer like, you have to watch this. Air New Zealand has a video up. Allegedly, you actually are seeing this on Air New Zealand flights, but it's the security video that tells you, you know, keep your tray tables up. Here's how to fasten your seatbelt. But The Hobbit has essentially taken over the country of New Zealand from now until the movie launches. And it's a Middle Earth flight. So it starts off with an elven princess telling you about the safety features of your Air Middle Earth flight. Of course, flights full of Sauron and dwarves and... hobbits and elves.
Okay. And a couple of normal people.
If you got to watch these safety videos, they might as well do something to make it interesting. I mean, even if you don't really care for The Hobbit or not, it's like, well, at least it's not the same, like, ladies and gentlemen, please pay attention to the following safety video. And it just bores you to tears. You might actually watch this.
Yeah. It's long, too. It's like 4 minutes long.
Yeah, it is. Jackson film.
You know, it's sort of like the Virgin America one when you see it for the first time. You know, it's the little sketch art and there's nuns with all the gadgets and there's a moose, you know, sitting next to a guy. And you go, oh, that's cute. And then the 20th time you see it, you just want to punch it.
You just ignore it. It's just like all
but
the
But I love this. And I think a solid three viewings of chuckling.
This was made by Weta. The special effects house that does all of the Lord of the Rings stuff, Peter Jackson's special effects house.
Well,
what?
I can't wait for the director's cut, the extended cut, the remix cut, the producer's cut.
There's
Blu-ray.
There's definitely inside jokes if you don't know Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit that would just pass by you. But they make if you need a light in the darkness, follow the glowing strips on the floor. There's an appearance by Peter Jackson at one point.
Also, think of how many people are flying Air New Zealand in order to...
He puts on the ring and disappears.
In order to go see Lord of the Rings stuff in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So, how fun.
Anyway, best airplane safety video ever made, in my opinion.
Easily.
Let's check the calendar.
Okay. Hey, so NaNoWriMo starts today.
I know. I got to start writing.
What is this, Tom? For anyone who's like, is this a rhinoceros thing?
It is. National Rhinoceros Month kicks off today.
And that's when you say, rhinos are cute.
You have to ride 1,500 rhinoceros feet. Every day. No, National Novel Writing Month is a way to encourage people to get started writing. If you're not interested in writing, it's not for you. But if you're like, I want to write a novel, but I just, you know, I've got this excuse, that excuse, get rid of the excuses and just start writing. The aim is to put 50,000 words down on paper by the end of the month.
And you're not supposed to self-edit or anything. You're
don't
just
self-edit,
supposed to
just
write your little heart out.
What it does is all the authors that I've ever interviewed recommend that the biggest thing you can do to become a writer is write every day. And this is supposed to get you in that habit.
To flex those writing muscles in your brain. Well, so start. Maybe I'll do it too. Probably not. Tomorrow, the iPad Mini begins shipping. It's the Wi-Fi only model, though, and only for those who pre-ordered right away around midnight. Back on October 26th because I didn't until... Well, no, I have the LTE model, so it doesn't matter, but it is now back-ordered for everybody. iPhone 5, we mentioned, hitting China. We're going to see some numbers there. Also coming to India starting tomorrow, November 2nd. November 2nd, also the Sony Xperia TL is coming to AT&T for $99 with a two-year contract. And Samsung's Galaxy S3 Mini is coming to the UK on November 8th. Get ready. Much mini.
I know. You know what else is coming?
What?
Incoming.
Incoming message.
Ah!
It's a message. A message from Keith in Atlanta. Hey, Sarah, Tom, and Iaz, and Jason. Comment about the Boxy Box. It's not surprising to me that the folks at Boxy have chosen Walmart to exclusively carry their new box. I see it as another decision to market towards the mainstream consumer and not the HTPC crowd. $15 a month is quite steep for the ability to record free TV, and I believe only a mainstream market will be willing to commit to such pricing. While it's disappointing Boxy is not developing for roll-your-own-buffs, it's perfectly understandable and it's necessary for them to become more and more profitable. That said, I do wonder how long regular customers will be willing to pay close to $200 yearly for the new device. And actually, there was an article at The Verge, by the way, that said that Boxy is they're offering early adopters perks. So there's a little addition to this whole story. Anyone who purchases Boxy TV during the holiday season, you're going to get 3 months of the cloud-based no-limits DVR for free. So 3 months free, so you don't have to pay that outright up front. And then you can subscribe for the discounted price of around $10 per month. So they're trying to reward people for that.
Yeah, remember, the $15 a month may sound expensive if you've never paid for DVR service before, but it's actually about normal. It's not the cheapest, but it's about normal for DVR type service. You're paying for the guide and you're paying for the ability to set season passes and all of that sort of thing. And it's all managed for you. And in this case, you're paying for unlimited storage, so you can record everything if you want, and then look for it in the interface and just say, like, okay, I'm basically recording everything I could possibly ever be interested in so that I can just have it on demand whenever I want, because it's unlimited storage. The big thing with DVRs is managing your storage and, like, how many episodes should I keep and all of that. So I think it's pretty compelling, but you're right. It's not going to be for everybody.
Yeah, I think on the actual boxes, it's, you know, free TV or free your TV or something like that. So that big word, you know, free thrown around, and then, oh, by the way, pays $15 a month.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of that, oh, wait a second, does that make sense? Some dissonance there.
It's a little cognitive dissonance. Well, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks to everybody on our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, for contributing and letting us know what stories you would like us to cover. The top three stories up there were covered either in News, Fuse, or in discussion today. We do pay attention to it, and we thank the moderators who keep it working smoothly and everybody who submits stories, and especially everybody who votes on the stories and lets us know which ones they would like us to talk about. It's technewstoday.reddit.com. That's it for us. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. Or you can give us a call and leave us a voicemail. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. It's Friday tomorrow. Friday means Darren Kitchen. We'll see you then.